This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are back, VSiN by the Books, top of the hour. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. He's our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. We know that the NFL preseason is only a couple of weeks away. Smart Money's already moving those lines here, Jensen. We have got a football special right now. It's out there for just $175. You got to get it before that price goes up. It will go up, by the way. Instant access to our VSiN NFL betting guide that's out right now. It's going to help you attack those futures, win totals, and player props. Plus, we're going to be including the new Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide with over 425 player profiles, projections, and rankings to help you prep for your fantasy drafts. So sign up now. I'm going to get full VSiN Pro access across every sport through the Super Bowl. That includes daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. You, sir, are getting ready to fire on some plays in Major League Baseball. Let's get to all of that in today's edition of the Daily Diamond. It's kind of funny seeing on social media people lamenting that there are only five games on the docket yesterday, Jensen. It's almost like, hey, you still got five games, people, right? So you get a full slate tonight in Major League Baseball. So if you didn't find the right opportunities yesterday, Jensen, I think we've got many more and much more of a menu to choose from today.
We do. And not often do you get a couple of setups that are really advantageous to push some chips to the middle on. But Dave, identifying two totals in two different games that I feel very, very bullish on. These are going to be three unit max plays on two totals. Let's start first with a couple of marquee matchups as far as pitching goes. Let's start with the Yankees and the Phillies. This is Cam Schlittler against Jesus Luzardo. Runs at a premium tonight, Dave. And if you want to start on the Yankee side, Cam Schlittler hasn't allowed more than two earned runs in a road start since April 12th at Tampa Bay. That covers nine consecutive road starts, limiting opponents to two earned runs or fewer. Jesus Luzardo, three of his last four home starts, Dave, two runs or fewer allowed. I really absolutely love this total. It is already on the move, so I'm glad I grabbed it. And if you still want to buy up to eight, or if you can find an eight, that's exactly where I want you to jump in. Yankees, Phillies, under eight, minus $1.29 is what I got. And it is even cheaper at Circa at minus $1.15. Absolutely love where this spot is. I'm also going to jump in on the Phillies on the alternate run line for a two-unit play at plus $1.09. Listen, this Yankee offense has really sputtered. They have had their issues, and I will absolutely go with the better offense on paper tonight. So three-unit play on the Yankees, Phillies under eight, minus $1.29. Two-unit play on the Phillies alternate run line, minus one, plus $1.09 to get it done tonight.
All right, and what I'm doing, because I'm trying to get these numbers, when my guy Jensen Lewis is firing like that, I will be backing your play. So I'll be joining you in that under. I'm going to search around here and see if I can find those eights right now, Jensen. Very strong play that you have there. Tigers, Royals, I was hoping for my Royals to have some sort of bounce back in the second half. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. Not saying they're dead in the water, but you're going up against Tarik Skubal. That feels like you're definitely swimming upstream today.
Definitely. Tarik Skubal, Dave, in his last 19 innings head-to-head against the Royals, has surrendered just two total runs. And you know, for the Tigers to wriggle off the hook last night, sometimes you can carry momentum over. I did go pretty decently on the Tigers run line last night, not able to get that across. I have more faith today that Tarik Skubal able to get it done, and we don't have Randy Dobnak out there just doing whatever wizardry he was doing to the Tiger lineup. It's Beck Way. Let me repeat that. It's Beck Way who's going to get the start for the Kansas City Royals. You got to lay over $3 at DraftKings on the money line. So we're going to take the run and a half. We're going to lay that with the Tigers. Tarik Skubal, again, going to limit the Royal offense. And I think the Tigers out in force early at 6:40 p.m. Eastern to win comfortably for the Tigers to take game two of this series.
Sorry, Kansas City. It's Paul Sorvino play. I got to turn my back on you now. Maybe rolling with those Tigers and lay that run line here at a run and a half. Pirates and Cubs, and normally when you get to the north side, you got to check that weather and check that wind, Jensen. What are you seeing today there on the north side of Chicago?
It is blowing straight in from center field. Not a true, like, okay, run suppression ideal, but it is a 6 mile an hour breeze blowing straight in from center field. We'll take everything we can get at the friendly confines, and that it's more the pitching matchup, Dave, that we are going to attack again. Another three unit play here on the under 8.5 at minus $1.34. You can see some eights already there. Now it has come down a bit in some places. Circa has the under 8 at minus $1.05. First on the Pittsburgh side, Jared Jones, three consecutive starts allowing one run or no runs. He has been locked in and absolutely love the stuff that he's rolling out there right now. Same can be said for the starter for the Chicago Cubs, Matthew Boyd tonight. Dave, he's had five home starts at Wrigley Field, four of them he's allowed two runs or fewer. We're going head-to-head here with two offenses that have been traditionally really good and as of late have been awesome. But you know me, Dave, good pitching always beats good hitting. Let's err on the hurlers tonight, continuing their dominance. Pirates Cubs under 8.5 minus $1.34 for a three unit play.
All right, now got a point of order here. It is in Pittsburgh that I'm seeing here for this game today. But you gave that weather.
My apologies.
It's a better pitching park. Yeah, but it's better at PNC. You still like that? I mean, it's even friendlier confines for pitchers. You would think in Pittsburgh than in Chicago, correct?
My apologies. I had read it backwards here on the weather reports. I was looking here at Overcast. Kevin Roth, by the way, shout out meteorologist Kevin Roth, does a great job. Yes. Yeah, so winds blowing in straight from center field at PNC Park. Thank you for reminding me of that. But yeah, still love the matchup and still love the opportunity here. 6 mile an hour straight in from center field, 79 degrees tonight there at PNC Park. But again, still the pitching matchup, absolutely what you love here. And so I think Jared Jones, Matthew Boyd, that's what we will take tonight.
Brewers and Rockies. And when we're looking at this, it feels like it would be lopsided in one direction. Do you see it being all Brew Crew all the time today?
Yeah, I do. And again, this is an afternoon game here in Milwaukee, 4:10 Eastern. Tomoyuki Sugano going to get the ball for Colorado. Shane Drone, who's been excellent for the Brewers, being inserted into this rotation. Total is at 8.5, and we are going to attack the over 8.5 at minus $1.14. Sugano in his last four starts, Dave, a 6.85 ERA. That is advantageous for the Brewers, one of the better scoring offenses, especially at home. We're also going to lay the run and a half for the Brewers for a unit and a half play, minus $1.17. Milwaukee is 22-19 as a home favorite on the run line, so nothing egregious. This is more going after a starting pitcher who recently has been giving it up left, right, and center. Let's take the Brewers to score early and often, covering the run line for a unit and a half, and also the over 8.5 at minus $1.14 for a unit and a half play as well.
I will be tailing you on those plays, Concert, like where your head's at today with those matchups. Mets and Dodgers a little bit later on. I was asking you this, like, boy, if you're a Met fan and you're like, how can we get back in this second half here? Sean Manaea against Sasaki, and Sasaki's been maybe the weak link so far for the Dodger rotation. Does it feel like a potential overplay here for two guys that have been struggling to keep runs down?
Yeah, potentially. I want to see lineups before I would lock that in, but you definitely went right where I was kind of looking. And considering, you know, what has happened here thus far, and what a great road trip so far for Max Muncy in particular, absolutely torched the Philadelphia Phillies in that series. Now the Dodgers might be able to feast their eyes a little bit more so at Citi Field on a left-hander that they've had decent success against. Hey, to be fair, Sasaki has actually looked pretty good here to start the second half and even into the end of the first half. The command is always what you worry about. If the walks start early, does that get into his head a little bit? But again, I'll wait for lineups to see if this is a play. If you can find an 8.5 right now, maybe snatch that up. I'm seeing nines right now at DraftKings, Dave, so I think that would be advantageous. No official play on that, but you went right where I was leaning to the over between Dodgers and Mets tonight.
Let me ask you a bigger picture question about my fighting fish down there, because there hasn't been a whole lot of fight in this road trip. They come back battered and beleaguered, nine straight losses. They're going to entertain San Diego coming in. I think San Diego feels like if they can make a push, maybe our GM, A.J. Preller, won't trade away pieces, and we can make a run of this thing. You've been in when things are going good. You've been in them when they're going bad. How do they exhale for a young baseball team and go, we're still above 500, even with the nine-game losing skid. We're still one game over 500. It's still right in front of us. How do we relax, get back to playing the base type of baseball we were playing before this massive skid?
Yeah, there are going to be stretches like this, Dave. And to be fair, where has their strength been? It's been when they've been at home. And so guess what? They're home. And San Diego is on the third leg of a three-city road trip here. You got to take advantage when you can. I know they haven't named a starter yet. The Marlins haven't. But this is a team, Dave, that is 31-20 there at Lone Depot Park. So they have the most wins in the National League in their home ballpark, aside from looking at the Arizona Diamondbacks, who have 31. The Braves have 32. The Brewers have 34. And, of course, the Dodgers have 31. So you take care of business at home, you're going to be in great shape. It has been a place where they have really gotten things going well. I would expect that to be at least the mentality tonight when you go in. Is it, boys, all right, wasn't the greatest stretch here, but we should be okay. Let's get it going with that first game of the homestand tonight.
Yeah, just kind of woosaw that whole thing, the nine games. Yeah. Let's get it out and the bad energy, block it out, and let's get back to playing some good baseball down there in South Beach. When we come back, Lou Finocchiaro is going to join the program, and we're going to get his thoughts here because we do have an interesting fight night that's going to happen over there in Abu Dhabi. But also, right here on our program, Lou wanted to give out his NFL futures plays that he has. So you haven't got them anywhere else. Lou's going to give them to you next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books, on this Friday morning. Dave Ross and Jets Lewis here with you. And, you know, we talk about if you want ratings on the program. Of course, you want eyeballs to watch your program. You always talk about the Dallas Cowboys. And I don't know if our next guest, Lou Finocchiaro, feels like we've talked too much Cowboy football today in the program. But the great Lou Finocchiaro does join the program. We got UFC Abu Dhabi. And he's going to give out his football plays for the first time right here on our show. Lou, very excited about that. Again, give him a follow on X at GamLou and check out the podcast, the Sneak Teep Pod, and, of course, the Bout Business Podcast. Lou, you want to start there with the football? Because I know you kind of wait before you like to give out those football plays. Do you think it's time to strike now? Have you seen enough to formulate some actionable plays in your eyes?
Well, guys, thanks for having me on. And the answer to that is yes. I've been able to do my full 560-page NFL research, and that's completed. I wanted to take a little time, digest it, and now I'm ready. But what I'm ready to do is I'm ready to start making opinions on negatives. What teams will not win a division? What teams will not succeed in their season win totals, and et cetera? And the only reason I'm willing to go negative is because the injury, the trade, the unforeseen can only help me. We saw yesterday a young linebacker for Carolina lose his season. Yeah. He'll be back next year better than ever. It's tragic for the player. It's reality for the gambler.
Okay, so that sets the stage. And you are pretty convinced on one of these season win totals. And I cannot wait to hear your explanation. You're targeting the defending Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks. Lou, I give you the floor. Lay it out for us and what you like and why.
Yeah, and Jensen, this one trumped the other one, and that's Baltimore. Baltimore is a lead balloon, baby, but we're going to talk about Seattle. And when we talk about Seattle, I think it's critical to understand what happened last year. Darnold, under his eighth OC in 8 years, really excelled. And Clint Kubiak, this discussion is going to be as much about him as it is Darnold and that offense. The loss of Clint Kubiak, as well the loss of the quarterback's coach and the running back's coach with Kubiak to go to Oakland, is a massive loss for Seattle. And when you look at some of the things that Darnold did last year, listen, that Darnold last year, the most turnovers of anyone in the league, second most interceptions in the NFL, first most fumbles in the NFL. He loses both running backs off his team. Last year, the Hawks scored third most points scoring offense. However, their offense was ninth in offensive success rate, eighth in EPA per play, 21 red zone efficiency. And then you add 20 turnovers on top of that, and then you lose their leadership. The one thing that Kubiak was able to do was to allow them to realize when they were down in games, they won at a 70% clip once down. The NFL average was 36%. They had the number three roster health on offense, 3 in O-line, 5 in offensive health overall, and quarterback health, number one. So O-line continuity, loss of two running backs, you take the heart of their play calling away from them, and what you're going to have there with the loss of Charbonnet and the other running back, they bring in a rookie. You have a defense that's world-class, no doubt, but that the longer that defense stays out there, the more tired they're going to be. We saw that in Houston last year. So to look at Seattle on the Super Bowl hangover after playing all those games with Darnold's ninth offensive coordinator, I find going under to be a very bullish position. 10.5 is currently -105 to the under. 9.5 is currently +160 to the under. And I'm going to bet it under 11.5, -200, one unit for a half. Under 10.5, two units at -105. And then under 9.5, one unit at +160. I really think that Seattle, when you look at their division and top to bottom, are going to have a dynamically difficult time trying to make 9 or 10 wins.
And we know, Lou, we love having you on all year long. And even during football season, when we're breaking down our UFC plays, you'll give us some NFL plays and some teasers that you're very good at as well. Very quickly, before we turn the page to UFC Abu Dhabi, you know, we've been kidding about the Cowboys a little bit, and it's been Cowboys Central today, so I've been in heaven talking all this Cowboy football. You mentioned Baltimore, too. Out of those two teams with high expectations for both of those squads, do you have angles on either one of those two teams that you do think is actionable?
Well, I think the Dallas offense is going to be – I don't want to float your boat, Dave, but I think they're going to be very, very potent. It's what happens on the defense. As far as Baltimore is concerned, I could give you a rundown as deep as this page on Seattle, but at the end of the day, whole new coaching staff, and a quarterback that I think is in regression, and that lays the basis of it. Everybody's convinced of their defense. That defense wasn't that good last year, boys. We'll see what happens in Baltimore. That's an 11.5 total. They're getting way too much credit, and I see in the periphery a lot of people that are blowing a lot of smoke up Cincinnati's ears. I'm not sure if I buy into that, but I don't see Baltimore as a 12-win team. I just don't.
This is the beauty of America. In a Lewis Ross administration, we can agree to disagree with one of our cabinet members, the Secretary Lou Finocchiaro, going directly against two teams Dave and I are very bullish on the Ravens and Bengals. We love debate. That's why we're here. Let's debate, because that's what an octagon is for, to get some people in the middle, and let's duke it out. On this main card here, Lou, I'll take it to the top here with Ankalaev and kind of, I mean, it's a ridiculous number on the money line. We know that. The handicap the fight in your eyes, you know me, I'm a method of victory guy, kind of look at maybe some more advantageous odds here. Break it down for us and kind of the angles that you like on that main event.
Yeah, I mean, there's like seven or eight fights here lined at -310 to the favorite or greater. So this is one of them. I believe Ankalaev is rankled based off his last performance, is going to come out hot. And Guskov takes this fight on short notice as a guy that's going to acquiesce. He's going to stand there and engage with him. And he holds his hands low. He gets hit. He doesn't have great defense and he can tire. So it's not a great situation for him. The way I approached this, as I wrote in the digital magazine, is I took this fight to start round two. And believe me, I'm going to be holding my breath from the first minute on. And if the fight can start round two, then I have it tied into a parlay into an upcoming fight card. But I think this is all Ankalaev based on his embarrassment from the Pereira fight.
I see it the same way, Lou. I think it's one-way traffic here for a guy that's there to be hit and Bogdan Guskov. And again, you might be able to still get that start, the round two. I don't know if we're going to get to that over of 2.5. It could be very dicey there after, hopefully for you, it starts that round number two. You've got a very interesting pick that I saw. Nurullo Aliyev is going to be taking on Mike Davis. We had the American going over there to Abu Dhabi. And he's almost a $2 betting underdog here early on this prelim, Lou. Do you think we've got a live dog in the American?
I don't want to overstate this one. And we have a card that's been designed to allow the local regional fighters in Abu Dhabi to shine. So we got to be selective in what shots we take for someone that has to travel in, fight against the other guy in their hometown with the crowd, blah, blah. And I think this is the fight where you got a live dog, and you have a live dog based on Mike Davis's ability to perform at wrestling. He's a very solid wrestler. People don't understand. And on the feet, he'll dominate this young man. And Aliyev will definitely be the vice grip Russian trying to take him down. And if Davis can satisfy the first 5 minutes and survive and bring this fight into the second round, it will be target practice for him. Aliyev doesn't have the experience, nor has he been in with the kind of fighter that Davis has. Plus, Davis recently had to fight Fariz Zayam, long, tall, awkward Frenchman, and he looked just like warm manure. I look for him to bounce here. I look for his wrestling to surprise everyone, because the world, like last week, all the smart guys are on Bashy, and Bashy got his butt kicked. And all the wise guys, all the numbers guys are chasing Aliyev. We'll see what happens, but I'm telling you, Mike Davis will fight for your money, and at +185 or +190, I'm all about him.
I absolutely love it. I was against Bashy last week. I had to hold my breath until that knee came through up the middle. Lou, when we were winners, cash those tickets, baby. Hey, very quickly, tell the people about the Bout Business Podcast Sneak Team, what they get when they tune in every week.
They get a blowhard Sicilian telling them about fight opening lines on the Sneak Team, and on the Bout Business, they get my final results. My final releases for the week. That'll be out later today. Thanks so much for having me, guys. Great show. You're doing a great job. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, you're the best. Lou Finicaro, give him a follow on X, @GamBlue. It doesn't get a whole lot better than that. And I love his NFL picks as well. Going to give you our best bet.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
The Circus Survivor documentary is back. It's bigger than ever. 18.7 million on the line in a new grandissimo format, raising the stakes even higher. So you missed episode one. You can catch it right now on YouTube. Just search VSiN Live. Episode two is going to air this coming Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Every agonizing moment of opening weekend, plus the early winners, losers, and storylines shaping the season. Whether you play Circus Survivor or just love the drama, you do not want to miss out on this. It's every Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern on VSiN, or catch up anytime on YouTube. Just search VSiN Live. It is fantastic. I'll tell you this, Jensen. I think after week one last year, felt very good. I was on Indianapolis on the opening week last year, and people weren't really high on them, and I felt like, oh, man, we got a shot to win this thing. made it about a month, and then I got undone by Mac Jones in a backup quarterback. So that was my agony last year to get knocked out of Circus Survivor. You never forget those things, Jensen. They stick with you for a long, long time.
I have an idea. I'm pretty sure we're going to have a lot of email submissions from people that are in various Survivor contests, and we welcome those here. Buy the books at VSiN.com. Once we get involved, I can't wait for people to tell us some of their strategy, you know, what they're involved in, and we will definitely help you make some of those decisions. To that end, Dave, we always love hearing from you, and Jimmy from the Cape has chimed back in up in Massachusetts. He said, Dave, this is a funny one. I'm sure it's tongue-in-cheek. Your big move in the nightlife for an international sports betting playboy, what is it like for yourself in horse country? But more so, he's asking about looking at the coach of the year market, and yep. Kind of goes back through the last handful of years. So 2023, Kevin Stefanski, 11 wins, playoff berth, roster injury plague. 2024, Kevin O'Connell, 14 wins, number two seed, Darnold out of nowhere. Last year, Mike Vrabel, 14 wins, two seed, roster had a poor grade. He's looking at Liam Cohen. Jags were second in voting. Ben Johnson for the Bears was third in voting. He said some teams will never have a chance, but great coaches like Andy Reid, Sean McVay would have nothing or would have to do something record-breaking, leaving a market of just a handful of coaches to exceed expectations as candidates. Can we make a case that despite the crazy dramatic week-to-week moves, this is a more efficient market than given credit for, one we need to swim in? So I'll give you the floor on kind of where you think Jimmy from the Cape is coming from, identifying or maybe shortening or filtering who those Coach of the Year candidates can be.
I'm with you, Jimmy from the Cape. Appreciate the inquiry. I will say it's a different lifestyle here than what I had in Las Vegas, that's for sure. The alarm clock gets to go off a little bit later, but appreciate that. A lot of fun, very different, but I do love all of Americana, traveling around this great country, working in different places in different cities. This one is definitely very, very different. There's not many like Las Vegas, Jimmy. I'll say that. That is one for the books, for sure. In this market in particular, Jensen, I think he's really smart, and a very astute observation that you can limit certain coaches right away because of expectation levels. The irony in this is there's one team that has very high expectations that we've talked a lot about today. That is the Dallas Cowboys. And with a second-year head coach that with a really good roster, and he's been a part of it now, even as an assistant under Big Mike and now as the head man for a second year, that if the Cowboys do have a big year, I would look to Brian Schottenheimer possibly as a younger coach, because the point he made about, say, a Sean McVay is so spot on that they've almost outcoached themselves out of this market, that they'd have to go like 15-2, right? For us to go, oh, right, Sean McVay is still a great head coach, even though we know they're going to be one of the front runners to win the Super Bowl. They are the front runner to win the Super Bowl. So I would look opposite of those type of guys and look for another team that should be really good in Dallas with a second-year head coach in Brian Schottenheimer. That might be the type of area that I'd look at. Hey, the Jesse Minter one in Baltimore will be interesting, right? Because we just heard from Lou Finicaro. He doesn't like this football team at all with that the entirety of that new coaching staff. But, Jensen, if it goes the other way for a guy like, say, Jesse Minter in year one, that's the type of guy that they'll go, wow, year one, he stepped in, redid the defense that wasn't very good to lose point a year ago, and they've all of a sudden won 14 games. I think you'd have to look at a team or the possibility of a team winning 13, 14 games like a Baltimore, like a Dallas, and a first-year head coach, a second-year head coach. Jensen, they seem to get the nod over the established coaches that have won year in and year out in this league.
Yeah, I would agree. It's a great question. The other one he has to me, last couple of years, I've added three-game series betting to my menu during the Monday, Tuesday, and Friday series offerings. I find it to be a real edge for players, whether one is looking for arbitrage or for the simple ability to customize one's risk levels when game three determines a winning or a losing wager. What are your thoughts? And P.S., I'm on the Reds series price plus $1.15 over the Cardinals this weekend, as the Reds have been grinding on the road lately, winning series lately, as all games are important to the finish. Cards are scuffling right now with offensive consistency splits, and on Sunday, plus the matchup for the Reds, whose lineup has had great recent success versus Kyle Leahy. Interesting way to handicap it, Jimmy from the Cape. Love to hear the way you differentiate it. Dave, for me, this is not a market that I traditionally will get into during the regular season. There are so many fluctuations, and because we have all kinds of roster moves that happen in between series, it's always something I guard against, having gone through that. As it stands, though, looking just for tonight, Rhett Lauder, Dustin May, total of eight. Cardinals, a decided home favorite here, minus $1.57. I'm inclined to look to the under, and I might even get there. I'm going to search and see if there's some 8.5s left, but I definitely like where that potential matchup is trending. Listen, Dustin May has been arguably their best starter for St. Louis all year. Rhett Lauder has had some inconsistency, but Jimmy is right. Where the consistency has been for the Reds on the road as of late is a trend that you might want to buy into a little bit. So always appreciate it. Again, buy the books at VSiN.com. And we had one more late submission, Dave. It's always great when we have people that are up early with us in Las Vegas that are sending in questions. This one from Kelly. Hi, fellas. First time, long time. Hey, Jensen, who's the biggest name pitcher you ever got a hit off of in practice, college, high school, whatever? It's a great question, Kelly in Vegas. No, not the female version, but we appreciate the submission there. Biggest pitcher. The only major league at bat I had was off Bronson Arroyo. And as the story goes, I absolutely laced a sidearm slider foul and was thinking two out of the box. So I came back. Ramon Hernandez was catching for the Reds, Dave. And I think I was using a Grady Sizemore model. So it had the cup on the bottom of the barrel. So Ramon had the bat standing up for me and was kind of laughing at me as I was running out of the box there. So I came back. I should have probably been punched out on the 2-2 pitch, but I kind of gave the good body language. So maybe I fooled. I would have tapped my head for the ABS challenge if I got rung up. I probably should have done it on the 3-2 pitch that I got called out looking. So I've never had a hit at the professional level. And I only got one major league at bat. So Kelly, I think the better part is looking back at, we were looking at it yesterday. I've given up home runs in my career to five Hall of Famers. If you can name the five Hall of Famers without looking, Kelly, you got dinner on me at Barry's at some point when I find my way out there.
Hey, we need to check the spelling of Kelly in Vegas, how he spells his name. It could give a clue
two L's
as to who that
is. Yeah, it's two L's, with but the key is it doesn't end in Y, like Kelly in Vegas, great friend of the program. Oh. It's an E-Y.
Right.
Kelly
E-Y.
Is E-Y. Yes, yes.
Little update here. We do have a show that comes on after us called A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander and a Kelly Bidlin that's on that. So I don't know if this is the same inquiry, but whoever you are, Kelly in Vegas, we appreciate the inquiry early this morning here on a Friday. By the way, we're going to have Blake Topmeyer join the program in the next segment, talk all things SEC football. You do have a couple baseball plays that are already out there to recap the Daily Diamond a little bit. And for VSiN Pro subscribers, some action that you like today.
Yes, this Cubs-Pirates game is in Pittsburgh, confirmed. So did not want to put anyone into a tizzy when I was talking about it before. More enamored here by the pitching matchup and the recency of where Jared Jones, three straight starts allowing one or no runs, and Matthew Boyd in two of his last three road starts, Dave, zero runs allowed. Three-unit play for me on the under 8.5, minus $1.34. I know the Pirates are one of the top score. I think they are the top over team as a home favorite, which they are tonight. This is more a play on both these pitchers have been fantastic. Also a three-unit play in the under in the Yankees Phillies game, under 8, minus $1.29. Cam Schlittler hasn't allowed more than two earned runs in a road start since April 12th. That's nine consecutive road starts. And Jesus Luzardo, three of his last four home starts, Dave, two runs or fewer. Two big plays on two unders. Let's see the pitchers go out and perform tonight.
Great stuff. Great inquiries from Jimmy from the Cape and from Kelly in Vegas. We appreciate all those emails you guys send us. We'll try to get those out each and every day. Going to talk SEC with Blake Topmeyer next. What he gleaned from Media Days now that they have come and gone. That's next right here. VSiN by the Books.
Yeah.
VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Friday morning. A lot of fun talking about the college football media days down there at the SEC in Tampa all week long right here on the program. Here to give his insight, Jensen, on what he saw and heard this week. Blake Topmeyer does a great job as a senior national college football columnist for USA Today Network. Give him a follow on X at BTopmeyer. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Blake, good morning to you, sir. Jensen and I were talking about it all week, like what you really glean from these coaches. You wrote a column that maybe what you took away, it seems like these coaches are in unison talking about this 9-game SEC schedule that they have. What'd you make of what you heard this week?
Yeah, one thing that always bands coaches together is crying about their schedules. And one thing that we know is changing inside the SEC this year is the SEC is going from 8 to 9 conference games. And the coaches believe that that's going to make their schedule harder, which is true. They believe that there's going to be not any real tangible benefit to that. The coaches maintain that the CFP committee doesn't reward strength of schedule. Now, of course, that's a lie. The CFP committee does recognize strength of schedule, but I think there is maybe a possible argument that it doesn't recognize strength of schedule to the extent that the SEC coaches would want. But there is some recognition to strength of schedule. Otherwise, how can you explain 10-3 Alabama getting a bid when 11-2 BYU did not get a bid? If all they look at is record, BYU would have been in the playoff last year. So they do look at strength of schedule a little bit, but the SEC coaches think the committee doesn't look at strength of schedule enough to warrant this extra conference game. And of course, the other thing at play here, guys, is the SEC still requires its membership to play a Power Four non-conference game. The Big Ten does not have that requirement. So Big Ten teams have to play 9 conference games, but they can play 3 cupcakes in their non-conference schedule. SEC teams have to play at least 1 real opponent in the non-conference schedule.
Yes, Blake, I live in Buckeye country, so you're preaching to the choir. We're looking at these arguments come college football playoff time. But, hey, we do get a rematch, and this time in Texas for the Longhorns and the Buckeyes, week 2 of the season. I know a lot made about Arch Manning, and, of course, it feels like year in and year out now we've had this conversation. Is he the best quarterback? Is he the guy that can finally get Texas back to the promised land? Let me get your handicap first on the Longhorns, because that schedule, not only at home, very favorable, but opponents-wise, they're not going to do a whole lot of traveling early and middle part of the season. And then maybe your thoughts on where Arch does rank amongst what is an incredibly deep quarterback class here in college football.
Yeah, it really is a good quarterback class. I don't think Arch is the best quarterback in his own conference, let alone in the nation. I don't really see that as a big knock on Arch. I think it's more the other point that you made. This is a pretty good crop of quarterbacks. I mean, you look inside the SEC alone, and you have Trinidad Chambliss, who might be the best quarterback in the country, back at Ole Miss, along with Gunnar Stockton, who I just think is like criminally underrated to this point in his career. Everybody labels him like a gamer and a winner, and those are sort of used as negative terms. But like, the guy is a gamer. He is a winner. He's incredible against tough opponents. He's good in the clutch in the fourth quarter, and he's got a great arm. So it's like, you know, I don't see those being negative attributes to Gunnar Stockton being a gamer and a winner. So I would put within the SEC, I'd probably look at Arch and maybe that number 3 quarterback range. And then the question is like, will he even be the best quarterback on the field in that day whenever he goes up against Julian Sand and the Buckeyes? Last year, he was not. I think Arch has come a long way in his development since that game in Columbus last year. But you're right to mention that like early in the season, Texas has the benefit of playing quite a few home games. But I think on the whole, Texas' schedule is pretty tough. You know, I think if you just look at like top to bottom talented rosters, pound for pound, you go toe to toe. Heard it from Colin Simmons at SEC Media Days.
I think we got you back, Blake. Go ahead.
Yeah, Texas is loaded. We heard it from Colin Simmons at SEC Media Days. And in his words, he said, we're stacked. And they are stacked, but that schedule's pretty stacked, too. I mean, let's just look at it. They got Ohio State, too. They got Tennessee, which will be a top 25 team later in the month. They have Oklahoma, top 15 team, in the rivalry game. Ole Miss, that's a top 10 team. LSU, that's a top 10 team. Texas A&M, that's a top 10 team. So you kind of get the gist here. Texas' schedule is going to be really tough. Last year, they went 9-3 against a really tough schedule, and they didn't make the playoffs. So is Texas good enough to win the national championship? Yes, I think they have the talent, the depth, the quarterback, even the coach. I know Steve Sarkisian hasn't gotten it done, but guys, Kirby Smart needed 6 years to win a national championship. Ryan Day needed 6 years to win a national championship. Guess what? Steve Sarkisian in year six. I think Texas has the team to do it. They also have the schedule that could leave them at 9-3 and on the outside looking in.
Enjoying our conversation here with Blake Topmeyer from USA Today Network, talking all things college football and the SEC media days and specifics. It's always interesting when Lane Kiffin takes the podium. Pete Golding, I thought, was very interesting as well at Ole Miss. You look at those numbers here as the fifth and sixth betting choices to win the conference this year. LSU at 9-1, Ole Miss at 11-1. Not a lot of separation here, Blake, between those two teams. If you had to pin your hopes to one of those two to kind of be on the outside looking in to upset the apple cart here, who would you have better visions of grandeur for, LSU or Ole Miss?
I think LSU. And I give Pete Golding a lot of credit for keeping that team together in the playoff last year. I mean, heck, he beat Kirby Smart to get to a semifinal. But I think it's a much different animal being the head coach throughout the course of an entire season than getting a team up for one game. And let's be frank, as much as I may credit Pete Golding, Trinidad Chambliss was the real hero of that playoff quarterfinal game against Georgia. Now, Trinidad Chambliss is back. So is Kewon Lacy. Ole Miss has maybe the best quarterback running back combo in the country when you just look at those two guys. But on the whole, I think I trust Lane Kiffin at this point in his career much more as a program CEO than I do Pete Golding. Doesn't mean Pete Golding can't prove it to me, but guys, we've seen him coach two games, and one was against a Tulane team that Ole Miss trounced in the regular season. So there was no reason why you and I could have coached that game, and Ole Miss probably would have beat Tulane in the playoffs. So it's a small sample size for Pete Golding, and to me, I think I'm a little bit in prove it mode with him, whereas Lane's still got to prove it at LSU, of course. When he was facing the high expectations of his career in Southern Cal, he flopped. He fizzled. He got himself fired. Now, Lane would tell you he's come a long way as a coach, as a person, since then. I think we're going to find out, because the expectations he's going to face at LSU, I think, are going to be unlike anything he's ever seen in his career. And I'm including when he was the coach at Southern Cal, and I'm including when he was the coach of the Raiders and got himself fired in 1 year, the same year that he had Sebastian Janikowski attempt a 76-yard field goal or whatever it was. So Lane's a better coach than he's ever been. You've never seen Lane Kiffin as a better coach than he is now. But also, this is the most pressure that he's ever faced in his career. But I think he's proven himself to the point that I would trust them over Ole Miss.
Blake, last one from me. And as I said, here in Buckeye country, obviously sky high expectations for Ryan Day's crew. They will have arguably the best non-quarterback Heisman candidate in Jeremiah Smith. I like a couple of long shot plays you have potentially in this market that are non-quarterback related. Of course, Malachi Toney, what he showed us with the Hurricanes last year. Bo Jackson, who is going to get the lion's share carries now in the Buckeye backfield. And then Ryan Coleman-Williams, a wide receiver from Alabama, 200-1. It's just in about a minute, your quick justification on what you like about the long shots for those three guys.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan Coleman Williams this time last year, he was like a, kind of on that second tier of Heisman candidates. And then he had a sophomore slump, right? Well, now he's tweaked his name. He's added the Coleman. He's changed his number. He says he's leaving last year behind him. We know he's got a lot of talent. He has to find consistency, but he's going to be target number one this year in Alabama's offense. I think if Alabama is going to go, it needs a quarterback to emerge, and it also needs Ryan Coleman-Williams to be more of the guy we saw from him in his freshman year when he was a freshman All-America and had 177 yards against Georgia. Bo Jackson at Ohio State, I mean, I think he could be a 1,000-yard rusher. The issue with him is, do running backs win the Heisman anymore? We haven't had a tailback win the Heisman since Derrick Henry in 2015. And also, there will be a lot of competition from his own team there at Ohio State, I think. And Malachi Toney, I think he might be the best sleeper on this list because I think, you know, he's got a better quarterback potentially than what he had last year and Darren Mensah throwing to him. He's got a year under his belt now. We already saw how good Toney was last year. And also, he can do things other than just catch passes. He can return punts for touchdowns too, which is a little extra wrinkle for Heisman voters. I think he's a great sleeper, Malachi Toney from Miami.
Blake, great stuff. Appreciate the time and the information. Great work there at USA Today Network. Thanks for watching VSiN by the Books. Don't go anywhere. A numbers game coming up next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.